and welcome to New in Events, a podcast from IBTM with me, Shanali Devereaux. This is your go-to podcast for fresh insights and practical takeaways, whether you are new to the meetings, incentive, conference and events sector or a seasoned professional. You'll hear from industry leaders, discover innovative solutions, explore evolving trends and get inspired to take your events to the next level. So let's get on with the show. Hi, everybody, and welcome. This episode is all about legacy. When you're organizing events, what kind of legacy are you leaving in the world? And with that, I have the great pleasure of talking to James Latham, who is founder of The Iceberg. And he is all about that social legacy, not necessarily that we're an economic driver on the macroeconomic front, but what are those micro connections that are made at events that really, really, really change the world? And then we cross over the show floor to hear from Nick Graham, who is the sales manager at Olympia, a venue that has been going for over 130 years. And he answers the question, what does he need to focus on to keep the venue going for the next 130 years so they can leave their legacy towards a sustainable future? Enjoy the episode. I am delighted to be joined here today on the IBTM World floor by James Latham, who is founder of The Iceberg, presented by the Joint Meetings Industry Council. The Iceberg's a legacy platform for business and professional events presented by the JMIC, which is a global collaboration of business events industry association, focusing on the positive outcomes or legacies of business events. And this is because we only measure the tip of the iceberg. So do you want to explain?
Chanel, you're absolutely right. What a lovely introduction. Thank you so much for that. Yes, we've had 8 years of working in collaboration with some of the leading industry associations, publishers, event organizers, the key stakeholders who are the guardians of our sector of communications, which is business events. The problem we've had is that prior to maybe the global financial crisis, which was a particular moment in time, the industry was assessed by its consumption rather than the value that it created when it convened its professional or business communities. So the iceberg is pretty much the perfect metaphor for illustrating the value consumption that is relatively easy to see and measure, as is the tip of an iceberg, but the 90% of what props it up is the purpose of that meeting. It's why are we meeting? Why are we convening oncologists? Why are we convening hepatologists? Why are we convening the latest in AI and new technologies and doing so in the form of trade fairs and exhibitions? And you know what? It's not easy to measure that because it's longitudinal. And over what period of time are you measuring and what are you measuring? And that makes the whole concept of impact, design and measurement a pretty more sophisticated approach than we're used to in measuring purely consumption.
And it involves parties who are not part of what we call the industry. So the companies here that organize and facilitate the relationships and the human connections are not necessarily involved in the longitudinal impact of those connections unless they get the repeat business again and again and again.
That's a pretty commercial approach. That is a very good illustration, perhaps, of the for-profit sector. The professional associations themselves are very much more mission-driven. They're much more driven by purpose than they are by profit. But that doesn't mean to say that they don't need business events or professional events, in their case, as tools to their own financial sustainability. The challenge is really twofold. First of all, you have to persuade the membership of your organization that you're creating value, particularly the next generation, because they won't join otherwise and they won't travel unless you can illustrate you're creating value in the process. The other community that needs persuading at times of the value of business and professional events are policymakers and government, because they're the ones that regulate for or against us, and particularly in an era of sustainability and the focus on the footprint of our gatherings, we need to be able to illustrate the handprint or the outcomes and impacts of those in tangible ways. And we can do that in part through data, and we can certainly do it in the form of storytelling. We've got some really lovely examples at the Iceberg of how particularly the social impact of professional events have delivered improvements in healthcare, have saved lives, and have transformed societies and the way that patients are treated and the way that healthcare is delivered.
And storytelling has become increasingly important as a currency, I think, in the modern marketplace. At the risk of sounding, I'm a social scientist, and you're making me sound like a total capitalist on this podcast. It's hilarious because I'm using words like currency to describe storytelling. But I really feel like people are connecting to stories a lot more. And it's an interesting premise when you're talking about advocacy to government partners, because often when you talk to them, they do just want impact studies, quantitative things rather than stories. Are you feeling that people are listening to storytelling more?
I think they are. I think politicians do actually like a story. A good yarn to a politician is basically fodder to the electorate because they want to be able to tell the story themselves. I'm not convinced that it's purely a data set that's required. It has to be interpreted. But the problem is we aren't at the point where we could even galvanize every event owner to deliver an impact study and then measure it over time. So we have to rely much more on storytelling for now. And with AI-enabled tools, for example, that Meet for Impact and GEVME have just announced that they've launched a platform which will come out next year, which is called Impact AIQ, which is rather a clever play. And that's going to accelerate the ability to input data from events and then have it spat out in a sort of modular form so that we can actually be a lot quicker and a lot more consistent in the way that we report data. I still think the storytelling is critical. You're a cancer survivor.
Yes.
So is my wife, actually.
I'm pleased to hear that.
And very much alive and well, as you are, which is great. I'm sure that in both instances, there will be treatments that both of you received where the source code will have come from the convening of great minds around the challenges of cancer. And the one that I like, that I then translate into the power of business events, is the story of a lovely guy called Dr. Ryan Darcy. And Dr. Ryan Darcy is in Halifax, Nova Scotia, heading up the IWK Institute, which is a research institute. He's on the faculty of Dalhousie University and St. Mary's University. And Halifax, Nova Scotia is a tiny little city, really. It's a tier two, tier three city on the Canadian eastern seaboard. He is head of the faculty looking at biomagnetic research engineering, which is looking at brain scanning for head trauma. The technologies that are being developed from Halifax are absolutely groundbreaking and the world class. And Halifax is now effectively the intellectual capital of biomagnetic research engineering. So he was the ambassador for Halifax. He brought the big international event in the field, rather unimaginatively called Biomag, in 2014. And he brought it to Halifax, and the manufacturers of the equipment, the MRI kit, the tubes that you go into, that is produced and manufactured by the likes of Siemens, Hitachi, Fujitsu, GEC, the imaging companies. All of them arrived into Biomag in Halifax and realized that, in actual fact, the research that was taking place there would give them early mover advantage in repopulating the world's hospitals with that equipment. So they relocated equipment, manufacturing and research to Halifax, Nova Scotia, a newly formed campus called Biotic. And Biotic now employs something in the region of 7,000 people. So if you want to look at how business and professional events not only transform healthcare, they can also transform destinations and transform the knowledge economy. As people move from an industrial base to creative and knowledge economies, this is a really good example of how business events can be a catalyst for positive change and also how we can save lives.
Amazing. No wonder you love your job. It's fantastic.
I do. And I think it's just really important that we get the message to government at every level. The challenge that we have is that the investments in our sector are predominantly local. So we need to be talking to the city hall. We need to be talking to the municipal governments. We need to be talking to the national governments. It's not just in Brussels and it's not just on Capitol Hill that decisions in relation to our industry and certainly investments are made into the sector. And to protect that, we have to have visibility of the handprint of business and professional events rather than relying purely upon the consumption of event, travel and hospitality services, because that makes us purely a travel agent.
Yes.
And we're not.
No,
we're
not.
We change agents.
Absolutely. We are change agents. We change lives. We change economies. So you mentioned quite early on in the podcast that you thought the tip of the iceberg that we are measuring was relatively easy to measure. And actually, I come across so many event organizations who are even struggling with where they start with that, because they're so busy delivering the event and they have to know how useful it is to be able to deliver the event next year. And they're tapping on sustainability measures and they're tapping on diversity measures. I'm sensing information overwhelm just with the tip. So how do we encourage people to go further? Do we need to standardize that before we take it further?
There are some great tools out there. If you look at Destination International, DEI's event impact calculator is great. We've got some great tools in terms of measuring the carbon footprint. I love Trace by Isla. I think that's a particularly strong product, and it's endorsed by the GDS movement. I think GDS are doing some outstanding work in terms of sustainability. And of course, the Events Industry Council is the steward of the event impact accumulator, shall we say, with the economic impact study that they produce every year or so. It indicates that our industry is a $1.6 trillion consumer of our travel, hospitality and event services. That would make us the 13th biggest economy in the world. And that's just what we consume. But if you look at the case, for example, if you want to measure the true impact of an event, take this as a story. 1984, there's a doctor called Ian Fraser. He's researching the HPV virus that accounts for the majority of cervical cancer. He meets an American at a genital warts congress in Canberra, Australia. They realize that they're researching the HPV virus from diametrically opposite directions. And they collaborate and bring the vaccine forward by 10 years. It was launched in 2008, which meant that between 2008 and 2018, subject to the application of that vaccine, 90 million women were not treated, and a further 10 million women did not die. Do you want to carry on measuring the tip of the iceberg, or do you want to look at what the cost would have been to treat, what the health economics would have been, what the social impact of losing 10 million women would have been? Now, we need to start changing the narrative and going below the waterline to point to the true value of why people meet and what fantastic things happen as outcomes and legacies of those meetings. Because we create the meeting places and the marketplaces that transform societies and economies.
I absolutely love that. And that's a brilliant point on which to wrap things up, I think, for us for now, because I would love to ask you how you measure it. But actually, I would love more that people come and contact you as a result of this podcast and say, James, how do we measure it and get you involved?
Hop onto the iceberg. It's at the-iceberg.org. When it comes to measurement, it's going to be a very, very exciting year. Watch out for Meet for Impact. Look out for the Copenhagen Legacy Lab developments. There's some fantastic new tools coming to market.
Nick, tell me about your new facilities.
Hi, Shanali. So our new facilities, we are bringing to the market a brand new conference centre based around an 857-seat auditorium in central London. We are incredibly well connected. And people will know Olympia for the fantastic events we've had over the last 138, 139 years, mainly based on
139
years. Yes,
wow.
We opened in 1886. I wasn't there. I'm going to hasten to add that.
Oh, my goodness.
May look
otherwise,
it,
I would have
there.
Asked if it was Botox. But, you know.
No such luck, no. We've been predominantly known for our exhibitions. That's what we became very, very well known for. We're a great environment for that. Lots and lots of natural daylight of a scale that hosts some really cool, really good tier one exhibitions in the UK. We're one of the top four centres. What we've found over the years is that organisers were increasingly needing to put content within their shows to attract people and to keep them in the shows. It's a decision people make when they attend an exhibition to either spend their own money, definitely spend their own time, or their company's money or their company's time to attend these events. And organisers are having to put much, much more content than ever before. All of the challenges post the global financial crisis, Brexit, COVID, there was a great need for much, much more content. And a lot of that came from conferencing within the space. Previously, we had a conference center that was good, but not great. It wasn't located in the right place in the building. It was very much a function rather than form. It was, we have this space, let's put a conference center there. As part of the overall 1.3 billion development, we wanted to put conferencing at the heart and content at the heart of everything that we do. After lots of industry research, we settled on a number. The sweet spot for us was between 800 and 1500. We believe that there was a need in London for that space. The absolute need for us was to make that connect to all of the facilities we have. You had to leave the building to come back into the conference space. We wanted to make that journey internal so that you could use our largest space and the conference center on its own, or really, really put some cool confex type stuff within there. So that's what we've done. And we're near the end of a 4-year process of that 1.3 billion development. So we're here at this show speaking to many organizers, associations, industry colleagues about this new facility that we're bringing on. We're super excited about it.
We're really excited about it. So thank you for talking about it. You mentioned it was a 4-year journey of the build, but you also mentioned the research that's gone into it and the changing trends. So how long has it been a process in the making?
We were purchased by UDFI in about 2016, 2017, it completed, and they were very keen on creating a destination. Olympia's very well known for the events it hosted, but it wasn't a destination in its own right, despite being centrally located in London. So they wanted to bring a lot more to it, and having a fresh pair of eyes from outside of the industry, and UDFI are nothing but super, super creative. They really, really are. So they worked with Spark and Heatherwick and really imagined what the site could be. So we've got two new hotels. We've got a theatre. So it's London's first theatre since the National. We've got a music venue opening up on site. We've got over 30 restaurants and bars all coming along. And the idea is people come to events, get them here earlier, get them staying later. We all know that a lot of business is done off of the show floor. The show floor is where you meet, where you conclude businesses off quite often, where you entertain. So as part of that process, we were all invited to reimagine the future. So that was in the time period between 2017 and 2020. The plans were put in place. The research was done at that time. And it was very much a case of let's activate this now. We were then hit with COVID and the global shutdown. Everything stopped. That didn't stop what we were doing. That enabled us to do a lot of the deconstruction work. The conference center facility that we're putting in is in what we used to call Olympia Central. It's the Art Deco building that opened in 1929. You'd have to see it. It's so phenomenal what they've done, supporting the facade of this concrete 1930s building, removing everything, going down 4 stories, because the overall plan was to pedestrianize Olympia Way. And Olympia Way was used really for the drop-off for exhibitors when they were bringing stuff into site. So bringing that to a central place where that can be activated, so you bring people up through the building rather than drop off at the front. And that enables Olympia Way to be a phenomenal arrival experience. So all of that thinking, all of that demolition work could happen whilst we were locked down. So we came back twice during 2020. One was to move our offices because they were in the building being demolished. The second time was to set up our new office, and just seeing what they had done, the amount of steel supporting the front of the building and what they were actually doing. And it really, really did start coming together. And I ride to work most mornings from Victoria. And I ride by High Street, Kensington, down Hammersmith Road, and I ride past the facility. And how I've not had an accident yet, because I'm riding past, looking up at the building, going, oh my goodness, wow, it really is fantastic. They've transformed the place completely. So to have that coming along, that's the kind of the journey from a hole in the ground almost to being within a year of fully opening. And I must point out, we are still open. We are still hosting a number of exhibitions throughout this period. But to have all of these new facilities open and ready and be a year away from that, we just can't wait to get open.
What is opening date?
As I say, I must stress, we are still open.
Yeah.
We do a number of events.
Of the conference facility.
Yeah, exactly, yes. Yeah. The conference facility is March 2026. We've got confirmed business from then. So we've got half a dozen medical associations from March 2026 that have confirmed with us. We are bringing the hotels online. So the second half of next year, we'll start seeing the hotels opening. So we've got Citizen M and Hyatt Regency opening on site. We're very, very lucky where we are that we do have a great number of hotel beds within a walking distance of us. So we've got the Hilton next door, K West, the Novotel West, all within a very short walking distance of us. But we will have hotels on site for the first time in our history, actually on site.
This is an incredibly bold, brave, big move.
The story is incredibly compelling. We are lucky in that being a tier one exhibition centre within the UK, there is visibility. So you can see that already. And all of this, it really is adding to that. And it's such a compelling story.
So there's a moment as well. You were talking about responding to what was happening in the marketplace, understanding that people were more content driven and therefore pivoting in that way. But then there's reimagining the future. And the kind of future that you've set out for Olympia is very much a future that major, major new infrastructures are taking into account. They're becoming arenas. They're becoming destinations within their own right. They're having bespoke hotel facilities. So this is where the research, I suppose, has led you.
It has. And it's understanding that our competition is not necessarily another convention centre. It's not necessarily another exhibition centre. It's where people choose to spend their time. If you look at leisure, if you look at where else people can go, it's not our standard competitors that we would have looked at 10, 15 years ago. People go to shopping centres. We all saw shopping centres expand into hosting events, doing activations. A lot of brands use those places now because they know that people visit there and they spend a lot of leisure time there. It's where people choose to spend their money. It's putting us into the place where we want people to choose to spend their money with us. More importantly, the money is time. It's how can we get them to choose to spend their time at our fantastic destination.
So it's turning it into a destination, really.
No, it absolutely.
It's the same destination marketing principle as well, as, you know, people come to business events, but how do you get them to extend their business days? How do you get them to spend time in the destination, but as applied entirely to your venue?
Exactly. And it's getting organisers to imagine what their customer journey might be. So here we have some fantastic content. IBTM is an amazing show, but increasingly there's more activity around the event. We're seeing it here. There was an awards, there's a forum, there's lots of things. People are entertaining their particular clients or a group, an association group. There's lots of dinners happening in the city centre. We were at Las Ramblas last night and we saw lots of industry colleagues around and about at dinners. It's all about that. It's how do you tap into the customer experience and their journey? How do you really, really activate their journey and give them the best? Why would you not want to attend an event that's really, really considered your experience before you even get there? And that's what we have to tap into. And it's also going back to the past. One of the first things that UDFI said to us as a company is, guys, look, you've been custodians of this fantastic space for 130 years. Our job is to get it ready for the next 130 years. It's that view of the space and the facility that's really, really driven this. It's not just how can we extract more, it's how can we get this ready for the next 130 years. This is a cultural iconic landmark in London. How do we amplify that?
And I love that.
Set this. It's great, isn't it?
I love the respect as well to where you have been in looking forward to the future and where you are going and remaining sustainable and relevant and customer focused.
Oh my goodness, how brilliant was it talking to James? Suddenly you realise that when you organise an event, it's not about all of these things. It's not necessarily about the objectives that you thought you'd stated, but it's about those connections that can absolutely change the world. I was completely blown away by what he was saying about those interventions between medical professionals who otherwise would not have met had it not been for us organising events that changed the lives, the social impact on hundreds and thousands of women. I love that. We need to understand the power of events isn't just the big stats that we collect, but those small stories. Please, if you have those small stories, tell James about them. If you don't have those small stories, start collecting them. And with that in mind, I was thinking about how Nick wants organizers to be managers of our customer journeys and what they're doing with their physical infrastructure to ensure that we can tell those stories really well and make those connections really well. So if you haven't seen what Olympia are doing with their redevelopment, please go and have a look, because they're really thinking about putting content at the heart of what they're doing in everything that they're building. Thanks for listening.
Hi everyone, Claudia Hall here, Exhibition Director for IBTM World. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, New in Events. Your host for season two is Shanali Devereaux, and executive producer is Mike Fletcher. Don't forget to mark your calendar for IBTM World in Barcelona, taking place from the 18th to 20th of November. And if you found this episode insightful, please share it with anyone else you think may appreciate it. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.